Hello and welcome to Torn in Two with Gregory Roberts. I'm not Gregory Roberts. I'm John Covington filling in for Gregory T. Roberts, and he has the day off. Of course, this is the show where he gets down to the truth and news and information. Today, we're talking about a couple of things, but we're talking about Proposal 3 here in the great state of Michigan. And Proposal 3 is all about reproductive rights for women here in Michigan. And on the show today, we've got joining us Nicole Wells-Stallworth, Executive Director of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Michigan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on today and hanging out with Gregory T. Roberts, fill-in. Now, latest polls say that majority of Michiganders, majority of Michigan voters, about 61.8%, 62% of voters here say they would support Proposal 3 and they're planning to support Proposal 3. 23.6% of those voters say they would not support this proposal, and 14% of voters say they are undecided. Why is it important, Nicole, in your opinion, that people, voters here in the state of Michigan, support Proposal 3?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking, and thank you for lifting this issue up before your listeners and viewers. I try to explain to people, I think one of the first things that we have to center around is why we're here in the first place. Why is this proposal needed? The Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, did something on June 24th that they had never done before, which was reversed a right that they had previously affirmed. And they took away our right under Roe v. Wade to have an abortion and to make our own decisions about our bodies. This is a right that we've had for nearly 50 years and something that many generations have fought for to be able to be recognized equally under the law. So Proposal 3 restores the rights that we've had under Roe v. Wade for nearly 50 years. That's why it's important. What does it mean for Michigan? What the Supreme Court's decision did was turn the decision over to states to decide how women's bodies would be governed, essentially. Here in Michigan, we have a law that was put into statute. It was voted upon and enacted by the Michigan legislature in 1931. And it makes it a felony crime to provide an abortion or to assist someone in obtaining an abortion. The language in the statute says procuring a miscarriage. So there's a lot of question marks about what does that mean when we talk about assisting a person? What does it mean when we talk about criminalizing or enacting a felony or charging someone with a felony for providing an abortion? Who all would be charged? Mm-hmm. That law is still on the books here in Michigan. It's mm-hmm. never been repealed. It is being currently blocked, and we're very grateful for the courts that are blocking that law from being enforced, but it's still on the books. Proposal 3 would give the voters of Michigan a decision on whether or not we should revert back to 1931, making it a felony making an abortion a felony in almost all cases, including in cases of rape or incest, regardless of the life and health of the mother in many cases. This allows voters to decide on whether or not we're going to be governed like that and allows voters to weigh in, restoring our rights back to Roe v. Wade, back to the standards that we've had under Roe v. Wade, keeping those decisions between a woman and their doctor as they have been for almost 50 years.
I sometimes wonder how, with the statute that you mentioned, 1931, that was almost 20 years prior to Roe v. Wade, right? The Supreme Court, Roe v. Wade. And you wonder, why is it that that those laws aren't repealed at the time, even though I guess people are thinking we've got Roe versus Wade, this is active now, there's no need for us to take this off of the books here in Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're asking a really great question. I think it's important to note society was much different in 1931 in terms of the rights that women had and the ways in which they were affirmed, not only in their households, but in the economy. Those were days when women were not allowed to have their own bank accounts. And so it's a very different time now. So you raise another question, though. The reason that the 1931 law has not been appealed is or repealed is because the legislature has failed to do so in its current makeup. So the current legislature has not repealed the 1931 law, though they have had ample opportunity. Senator Erica Geis reintroduced legislation to repeal that law almost a year ago now in November of 2021. When I say reintroduced, that wasn't the first time that a proposal had been put forward to repeal the 1931 law, and there was an interest in doing that. So that gives you a sense as to, I guess, some of the mindset in the public space. But again, going back to Proposal 3, this allows for the voters to be able to decide. This is the decision of who gets to decide in the hands of the woman and whoever she decides to consult, and people who can become pregnant, and their doctor. Voters in Michigan do very much see this as a healthcare issue versus a political one. And so this allows voters to weigh in. I want to just sort of point out a couple of things that Proposal 3 does, because it's really important to note that this proposal would affirm an individual right to make and carry out all decisions regarding pregnancy. So that's access to contraception, access to pre and postnatal care, access to any sort of pregnancy or post-term care that someone would need. And it prevents criminalization of pregnancy outcomes like miscarriage or abortion. It allows access to fertility treatments and sterility treatments based on a person's sexual health history and also their need. So, why is it so broad, you might ask? Well, when the United States Supreme Court reversed Roe v. Wade, in the opinion, it was stated that none of these things are explicitly allowed in the Constitution. For us, that could mean anything, really. And so we know that access to all sexual and reproductive health care services that we've been able to access over the last 40 plus years, we know that those are on the table and on the agenda. We want to make sure that the rights that were taken away from us are restored. And that's the importance of voting yes on Proposal 3.
60, where'd I go? 66% of Michigan voters say they disagree with the Supreme Court's overturning the 1973 Roe v. Wade. Do you think that, well, I'm not asking you to play pollster here, but is there really any chance that this proposal would be voted down in the state of Michigan? Before I introduce our next guest.
Yeah, I think, it's really important that all voters know and understand what our proposal is and does, which is why I'm happy to be having this conversation with you today. And keeping in mind what the stakes are. So we need to come out in big numbers and in big ways to make our voices heard. That's really what this is about. When we were qualifying for the ballot over the summer, we were able to collect a record-breaking number of signatures. We need voters to understand that that's not the last step. That's not the last word. The last word will happen when this is decided on November 8th. And what Michiganders should, and I'm hopeful that they will come out in large numbers to demonstrate, is that we're not going backwards. We are not going to allow for our rights to be taken from us. Michigan will decide for Michigan, and Michigan will affirm the rights that we've had under Roe v. Wade going for now and going well into the future, because this is the only sure way to be able to protect our rights, regardless of who's in office, regardless of who is serving in the legislature, regardless of who holds the executive branch of office.
Thank you. And let's bring in our guest, University of Michigan Health Center in Ann Arbor, Dr. Rosalind Maben Feaster. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And you've been listening to the conversation. Would you like to add any comments before we ask you a few questions? And Nicole Wells Stallworth, feel free to jump in as well.
Yeah, sure. So I think that something I've been talking with my husband a lot about recently, because he's an attorney, is that I never thought that when I went to medical school with a goal of wanting to use like my passion for science and for caring for women to improve their quality of care and help serve them, that I would have to worry about committing a crime. Mm. Like, it's a really interesting situation to be in, where providing healthcare to a patient, being able to counsel patients and talk with them about their options that make the most sense for their individual situation, could potentially be criminalized. And I don't think that that's what any of us like went to school to do. Like, we didn't go there to commit crimes. We want to help people. And I think that, you know, it's really important, like was discussed before, to come out and vote so that we can really protect what has been there for the last 50 years. In the time in which I've been practicing this, that was the life that I've known. And it's the life that my patients have known. And I would say, since the Dobbs decision came down, I've suddenly had like record-breaking numbers of patients like reaching out with questions about like what sorts of options they have for contraception, questions about trying to get like sterilizations done as quickly as possible because they're concerned that like that opinion is going to expand things out. But then also like a lot of lack of clarity about what we do in emergency situations for women who do need an abortion. To make sure that their health is in the place we need it to be and that they can go on and live productive lives afterwards.
What do either of you say, if you care to comment, about that person on the other side that says, has the argument, oh, well, they wouldn't need an abortion if they didn't have sex, or they wouldn't need an abortion if they had have done something different or whatever? What do you say to those people who might be watching this right now, who have that thought process? And also, if either of you care to weigh in on Herschel Walker and the hypocrisy there, feel free. It's a free show, and you can talk about whatever you want to talk about or not. But the first question is, what do you say to people who have this notion? What was Nancy Reagan's slogan? What was it? Just say no.
Just say no. Oh, just, Lord.
Just say no.
It's a hard no. So I guess the thing that I say to people who have that mindset is that, you know, what they're failing to take into account is every pregnancy is different. And I know that Dr. Maven Feaster will be able to substantiate this, but every pregnancy is different. Every life circumstance is different. And every person's access to contraception and preventative health care, and also access, equal access in the healthcare system, equal treatment within the healthcare system, equitable housing, access to housing, everyone's access to a clean and healthy environment is different. And so therefore, to be able to just blanketly ask people to just say no, or to just predict that every situation is the same and you should just be able to say no, I think is very misguided ideology. We are all navigating the world based on our respective places. And to suggest that a person doesn't deserve the right to be able to make their own bodily decisions would suggest that someone besides an individual knows better for that person. And that is a false premise. You know, our proposal is built on the fact that we believe that people deserve equal access to healthcare. We believe people deserve to be able to make their own healthcare decisions without interference or without government coming in and looking at their medical records. We believe providers should be able to provide the healthcare that they were trained to provide and provided licensure to provide. That's what our proposal is about and what it does.
And I noticed that you used the word misguided. That was, yeah. I noticed that was a very diplomatic word to use, Ms. Stallworth. Go ahead, Dr. Feaster.
Yeah, so I agree 100% with that. You know, there are not many situations where we would be talking about limiting someone's healthcare choices based on someone else's opinions or beliefs. That is not really a common thing. And I really don't see why it should be any different in this circumstance. People should be able to make the choices that are necessary based on their individual circumstances. And I think some of like what people decide is based on what we recommend for safety too. And so there has to be a space for that to happen. And I think I really enjoyed that you brought forward the point about unequal access. You know, social determinants of health really impact the quality of health that we have in our country. There are some that enjoy very excellent health because of all the resources that they have. And there are some that don't. And the people who are more likely to like be disadvantaged by these sorts of things are people who look like me. And I just don't think that that should be acceptable. I don't think that it's appropriate for someone who doesn't have to worry about what doctors they can see and what services they can provide for them to make decisions for people who don't all have that same choice.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, this is Torn in Two. I'm John Covington, sitting in for Gregory T. Roberts, and we've got Dr. Rosalind Maven Feaster joining us from the University of Michigan Health Center in Ann Arbor. And we've also got the executive director of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Michigan, Nicole Will Stallworth. The conversation is all about Proposal 3, a woman's right to reproductive rights here in the state of Michigan. If you're watching, and we'd like to know if you're watching and you have a thought, please be sure to make a comment or a question right there on the, and it'll pop up on the screen. And how are you going to vote if you're watching this, male or female? How are you going to vote, and why are you going to vote the way that you're going to vote? It's interesting that we would even be dealing with this in 2022. It just seems bizarre to me. And I know you guys have been very selective about what it is you comment on, but do you think that, justifiably so, I get it, do you think that this could potentially, just stepping away from Proposal 3 a second, of other things to come? Is this a sign of other things to come, possibly, if things aren't dealt with right now?
Well, I mean, as I alluded to earlier, when the United States Supreme Court, because the Michigan Supreme Court made a different decision allowing our proposal to be on the ballot. So we have to make sure that we understand that. But right. When the United States Supreme Court made the decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, the way in which the opinion of the majority was written, it indicated very explicitly that these things are not explicitly provided in the Constitution. So then the question becomes what other things that have been decided in the past were also explicitly provided in the Constitution yet upheld by the United States Supreme Court. I can think of equality in marriage. I can think of Brown v. Board of Education. And so the list goes on there. Griswold v. Connecticut, and that one had to was decided in 1965 around access to contraception. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are all things that unfortunately we're living in a world where we have to double down, and we have to use all of our tools of democracy in each one of our states and here in the state of Michigan to be able to address those things to protect ourselves from any future sort of decisions that could attempt to strike down any rights that have been affirmed for us, any equal rights that have been affirmed for us, any right to privacy that has previously been affirmed for us, any equal treatment within the law that has previously been affirmed for us. We need to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to protect ourselves. That's partly what Proposal 3 does for us around sexual and reproductive health care, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it gives us an opportunity to really reflect what the populace really wants at this point. If we're going to revert all of the decisions that were made that altered things that were written in the Constitution or that were not, then we're going to be right back to where we were at the beginning, which is not a time that I want to be at. And I don't think that that's what the vast majority of people want either. They want to have laws that govern them and situations set up such that they can make the choices that make sense for them.
Mm-hmm. Benita Threadgill says the racial disparity in healthcare is barbaric. Must have been a part two to that. I'm not sure. So, looks like that she was saying something else. I agree, John. It feels like this is an alternative experience that we even have to deal with these situations and consequences in America in 2022. Looks very similar to some past scenarios of The Handmaidens, which is crazy. I've not seen that show, but I've certainly heard about it. Thank you for your comments, Benita. Does the what happened in Kansas, is that something that you guys were excited to see happen, and it gives you a sense of comfort here in the state of Michigan? Kansas, which is I think leaning red, I think it's purplish reddish, and for them to do what they did there, when you saw that, what were your thoughts, each of you?
Well, I was excited I have to say, and hopeful too. And I think that I have to admit, I'm a little bit of a pragmatist, so I like really appreciate what the polling has shown. But on November 9th is when I'll feel happy when I know for sure what happened here.
It could be November 8th at like 8:45 p.m.
That would be ideal.
Could be.
I mean, it would.
Yeah.
I think, go ahead. You know, the thing that I keep going back to, and I think Dr. Maven Feaster even lifted this up, is that the majority, the people have spoken. You know, this notion that the people will decide for themselves. That's really what Prop 3 is all about. What we saw in Kansas was that when people know what's at stake, they will speak up, they will act, they will come out and vote for their values. We know that our issue on Proposal 3 and restoring Roe v. Wade in Michigan is something that is highly popular. The vast majority of Michiganders want to restore the rights that we've had under Roe v. Wade. The vast majority of Michiganders don't believe that their doctors should be criminalized for providing the healthcare that they were trained and licensed to provide. And so the vast majority of Michiganders don't believe they themselves should be criminalized for being able to exercise all of their medical healthcare choices as it relates to pregnancy. So what we saw in Kansas was just an example of that. And we're very proud of the work that was done down there. And we want to make sure, we want to see that happen in Michigan. The key difference is that Kansas came out to vote no on a legislatively referred proposal to strike down the right that they had already affirmed in their constitution to an abortion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Michigan, we're asking voters to affirm the right in our constitution to an abortion in all decisions regarding your pregnancy. We're asking for a yes on Proposal 3, which will allow us all to make our own decisions regarding pregnancy. And it will also restore the rights that we've had under Roe v. Wade that were taken away from us on June 24th when the United States Supreme Court decided to reverse that ruling.
What happens, ladies, if for some reason the proposal is voted down, then what?
Yeah, I think without Proposal 3, we are living in threat of this criminal abortion ban. It's one of the harshest in the country. It would provide doctors like Dr. Maven Feaster, it would charge them with a felony crime for exercising basic health care if they were to choose to do that. It also provides for criminal charges for anybody that helps a person who may be having a miscarriage or who may need an abortion. That is what is at stake here. This is serious. This is not a practice run. This is not a maybe scenario. Like, what if something happens? This is the real thing, that our rights have been taken away. We have this 1931 law on our books that has not been repealed. It is being currently blocked by the courts. That's true. However, a yes on Proposal 3 would allow the voters to decide on this matter. And it's also far more enduring than any statute could ever be, because it affirms our rights directly into the Michigan Constitution.
All right. Any closing comments, Dr. Maven Feaster?
Vote yes. No, I seriously, but vote yes. It is critical so that we can give all women or those who can bear children the opportunity to make choices about when, where, how they choose to do that, and to allow for that physician-patient relationship to stay intact.
All righty. 10 seconds.
Yeah, I just encourage everyone to vote yes on Proposal 3. We need that in order to restore the rights that we had that were taken away from us with the Supreme Court's reversal of Roe v. Wade. Anybody that wants to get involved can go to myreproductivefreedom.org. We welcome any and all people to help join with us in this fight so that we can have our voices heard come November 8th.
That was my last question. How can they get more information? Could you repeat that again?
It's mireproductivefreedom.org. That's mireproductivefreedom.org.
Awesome. Thank you both, ladies, for joining us. Thank Dr. Maven Feaster and Nicole Wells-Stallworth. Appreciate you both.
Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. Coming up after the break, he left politics, and I think it was 2015, and what is that, about 7 years? And Daryl Page is now back. He's running for County Commissioner, District 7. We're going to talk to him after the break. I'm John Covington, sitting in for Gregory T. Roberts. And you know what this is. Welcome back to Torn Into, dealing with truth and news and information. I'm John Covington, sitting in for Gregory T. Roberts. And I believe that he's on an island somewhere. He's vacationing. He and his lovely bride, they are vacationing on an island somewhere. And he's sunbathing, and they're telling him every 30 minutes, turn over, so you can get an even tan. No, in all seriousness, I'm glad to be filling in for him. I'm not sure if we've got Daryl Page, is he available? Do we have Daryl Page? Mr. Page, is he here yet? He'll be here in a few minutes. Okay. So I'm just here having fun, waiting on Daryl Page. Daryl Page was out of office for, he retired, I think it was 2015. A little backstory. He had served about 25 years between being a council person in the city of Muskegon Heights and the mayor of Muskegon Heights. As I said, he retired in 2015, and here it is 2022, and he has decided to run for county commissioner in District 7. And so he's going to be joining us momentarily. He's had technical difficulties. He had technical difficulties. Okay, so if we could just go to a couple of commercials, and we'll be back shortly. I'm John Covington, sitting in for Gregory T. Roberts, and this is Torn in Two, and we've got County Commissioner candidate District 7 Daryl Page coming up. Guy, he's here.
Hello.
He's here. He's here. They've just got me on here just to talking. And you know, I don't talk much.
Hello. How you doing?
It's so good to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. So let's just jump right into it. You, 2015, I remember a big goodbye soiree for you, 25 years of service. What makes you decide after, I know your wife is retiring, correct?
Correct.
She's retiring. You've got grown kids. You're a grandfather. You've been busy these last 7 years or so.
Yes.
Why jump into the race now? We're talking about the District 7 County Commissioner. Why now?
Well, To explain that, I will have to go back a little bit to explain the 25 years of service and the big bye-bye. When I first entered into the mayorship, I won that election. I asked for two terms, which was 8 years, to try to turn that around, because I said then, I if I couldn't do it then, I would move aside for someone else to come in and try to do better. I didn't believe in just sitting there and staying there for a long time. At the time, my second term was concluding, probably about 2 years in, a family member had a really bad situation going on. I had one family member in the same situation. So I actually left office at the end of that term. I didn't exit early, but I left at the end of that term to help a family member take care of the other family members, which continued on for about 7 years until both family members passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
So at that time, I was doing that retirement thing and saying, you know, I still think I have something left in me. So what do I do well? You know, dean of students, both, you know, Muskegon Heights and Muskegon, worked there, worked as job training, and also I was in the political arena. So I said to myself, you know, I would like to take a shot at that county commissioner. You know, some people ask me, did I want to do state rep? And I said, no, really didn't want to, you know, travel too far away from home, want to still be around in the area, the county. Actually, my father used to always tell me, you know, when I came back from college and stuff, he said, you know, if you're going to be here, you need to help out wherever you can. So I felt as though I still had something left in me to serve my people. And that's what I like doing. I like to serve people. People don't serve me. I like to serve them. So looked at that and talked to my wife. Decided, she said, yeah, you know, she feels that strongly about it. Let's go. At the time, I was a little unsure until Commissioner Wilkins decided she was going to retire. And that gave perfect opportunity to actually jump in the race.
Okay. So you just gave people a little bit of the backstory as to why you decided to leave after that second year, after that second term. You had said if things hadn't changed drastically by the end of the second term, you would move out of the way. And that just happened to coincide with family members and what they were going through at the time.
Yeah.
So we won't call you Anita Baker then. You know, Anita Baker's retired. She's retired a few times, but you know what? That's your prerogative and that's hers too. I would like to ask you a question about your comment about if you hadn't accomplished what it was that you wanted to accomplish at the end of the second term. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
What would you like to have accomplished as mayor that you didn't, that you weren't able to accomplish? Is there anything that sticks out that you thought either, oh man, we're so close, I know we can get this done, didn't happen, or something that, since I posed the question, something that sticks out, yeah, I would have liked to have gotten this done. And we understand not everything in the world of politics, and it's not just you, when you're dealing on a board of other people, there are other people, there are all kinds of other things that play into what gets done and what doesn't get done. And then some things are just not possible.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Well, let me say accomplished before not accomplished.
That was my second part of my question. But okay. You answer it the way you see fit.
Okay.
You're the guest. Yes.
I'll answer the way you actually.
No. Whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, me and my administration, what the administration did after we got it set up and everything, we did manage to keep ourselves out of trouble in terms of the city. There are a few things that were going on that where the state did not have a total eye on Muskegon Heights, but they had an eye on Muskegon Heights and stuff. And we had to change some things in order to move forward, not to be in the same situation that a Benton Harbor or a Flint or, you know, Highland Park was in.
Basically receivership is what you're speaking of.
Receivership, yes. Mm-hmm. So when we got our administration setting together, we actually made several trips down to the state of Michigan to talk to people down there to ask them, one, you know, they asked us what our concern was, and I just blatantly asked them. I said, "Are we targeted for receivership?" I said, "I'm concerned about that." And so, you know,
Daryl, can you explain receivership to somebody who might be watching that doesn't necessarily know what that means?
Yes, and I'm sure most people are aware what Highland Park and what Flint went through, but receivership is a situation when the funding in the city is below budgetary, you know, things have not happened correctly. And they look at you in terms that you cannot run your city or organization well. They will send someone in as an emergency manager, as they did with Muskegon Heights Public Schools at the time, to run your organization or your city or your school.
Well, thank you.
They usually come in, they look to sell off assets. As you know, we had a water plant in Muskegon Heights. That was a big issue with me, you know. So we got down there. They asked us, you know, well, we asked them. They said, well, no, not right now, but you got to straighten out some things. So what we did is we asked for a 6-year deficit reduction program. They gave us 5. We did it in 3. My administration and I did it in 3. And without cutting a lot, we just went into austerity program. When people retired, we didn't hire. We just kind of consolidated. And we kind of got the low-hanging fruit based on a consulting agency that was asked to come in and look over our operations. And they did a good job with the understanding that we had final say as to what we were going to do. Mm-hmm. So when I came into office, we were down probably about 800,000 to a million. When I left, we were up over a million and stuff. So I was happy about that. We also ran into a battle with our water filtration customer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They accused us of price gouging. And we said, that's ridiculous. You know, we can only sell to your municipalities at the same rate as we sell to our own customers. So, and we haven't, you know, going up on them. And when we do, we go up on you guys and stuff. Well, they said that we were price gouging and that they wanted to actually have some control over the plant. Well, Muskegon Heights has owned the plant since its inception. And I told them, I said, you guys are customers. That's like me going to Myers or JCPenney saying, that shirt is $25, but I don't even want to pay $5 for it. You know, and it's their product. So they said, well, we're going to leave. You'll never survive. And they did leave, but we had a plan, you know, to survive after they left. So, you know, and I know this has been hard, but, you know, it's actually been working. The water filtration plant had 3 sections that were built at each expansion, and each section was identical to the first. So there were 3. So what we could do was shut down, run 1, shut down 2, alternate, come back and run, you know, 3 or 2, plant 2 or 3, without it seizing up or shutting down, you know, the operation or some of the works in the water filtration plant. That was 2. And just bringing the council and some of the community together, you know, I love that and stuff, you know, going in, working with others, trying to make it better for the people in the city. Like I said, again, you know, we serve people. People don't serve us.
Mm-hmm. So what do people say when they see you? When they see you out at Meijer, they see you at the farmer's market, or they see you at a game. What do people say to you regularly when they approach you?
I'll keep that as to the city politics and stuff, because they say a lot of things to me. But and my wife doesn't like going to Myers with me because I can get into probably an hour conversation in 1 hour. But they say, you know, we appreciated why you were there. Some would say, you know, I really didn't look at you like I look at you now. Wish you were back. You know, well, it's the voice of the people that actually run things. We actually listened, got to a point where we listened to you. You elected us. We listened to you. We're the fathers of the city we're the fathers and the mothers of the city. Mm. And we listened to you. and we try to listen to you collectively. You know, it's kind of hard to listen to one person, but as a group, if the group is saying the same things, or we put information or suggestions out and you respond to those, you know, in a positive way, we tried to make that happen. The one thing we couldn't do, and I'm going to go to what we couldn't do.
Yeah.
We just couldn't get those streets done under the budgets we were operating under. I knew it was coming down the road because, you know, the big joke in the state was, hey, Muskegon Heights had the worst roads in the state. But as we were looking around, there was other infrastructure breaking down as well. And it started going to a national thing afterwards. And that money started to become available. And when that money did, you know, they were able to, you know, pass the present administration and administration before that were able to put some of that money toward mm-hmm. streets with a millage. So, you know, they're presently doing that. And, you know, some of the streets that weren't done are looking really good. So applaud them on that.
What is the first thing that if you're elected to serve, what's priority for you? What's something specific that's priority for electee Daryl Page, County Commissioner, District 7?
Well, priority for me is one of the same things that worked when I became the mayor of the city of Muskegon Heights that wasn't always there before and stuff, is to get everybody kind of going on the same page, even though District 7 is the district that I'm elected to represent. The whole county is what we need to represent and stuff, because as I said before, on when we were doing the election before, is that we have to work together in order to make the county a better place, not only for the people, but for the county itself. There are other counties who appear to be somewhat encroaching sometime and stuff, you know. And looking at this area is an area that is not as well utilized as it could be with the lakefront and all the things that's going on. It's very beautiful over here. And, you know, they look at it as some opportunities that may be missed. And, you know, want to actually see why that is. As you said before, you know, politics is hard and stuff. There's a person going against other people. Everybody has different opinions, different mm-hmm. concerns, and different ideas. What we all need to do is to come together and make those opinions, ideas, and differences work for the whole county as well as just our districts.
We got a comment from Anita Threadgill. We both know her very well. Mm-hmm. She says, it's a perfect role for you. She says it marries your passion and best skills in leadership, vision, and effectively working with all of the players across the state while articulating and seeking solutions, resources for the needs of the community.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Let's talk about Muskegon Heights for a minute, the community, the neighborhood there, particularly. What is Muskegon Heights capable of? What can that community look like, in your opinion, if the things happen that you just mentioned about saying, getting on the same page? You can always have people who aren't on the same page. That's just the way life works. If you can get the majority of people moving in the right direction, believing in the same thing, you can get more done, right?
You can get
more done. What could that community look like, in your opinion? I see that the first house is being built correct. For the first time in 17, in 20, 18 years.
Yeah, about 20.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to.
No. Sure. Yeah, the first house has been built in about 20 years, and that equates to actually residents in the city, okay? That's actually a good thing. I when I first came on, we were going through the Woodcliff project, actually, mm-hmm. and we had some bumps and bruises with that down the way. We had to eliminate a contractor because that did not work out well.
And I recall.
We actually went to an individual contract, which worked out pretty good. This is more like infield. That was more like subdivision. This is more like infield. So what infield and scattered site is that they're basically looking at vacant lots throughout the city, and they're building these houses on the vacant lots, pretty much like what's going on through the downtown Muskegon area as well. And that's a good thing. What we have to make sure of is that financing is correct and it doesn't, blow back on the potential buyers as a balloon. I think that happened back years ago when balloon payments came up and individuals started losing their homes and stuff, the new homes that they were just in, which was devastating. So as long as we can stay away from that, that's fine. The other thing is that what can it look like? Muskegon Heights is a treasure of just a treasure of wealth, a treasure of history. There are beautiful areas. You know, I just say all the time, with the blight situation that was going on and stuff, you know, people would come in, buy a house. And I was in the school system then, so I had actually individuals or students graduating who chose to take a different route in college and stuff. And they were getting married young. So, you know, someone coming back to me and he said, well, you know, we know you go to the house sale, the state house auction. And I said, yeah, at that time you could pick up a house with some good housing stock for maybe about $3,000 to $5,000. I said, get in it, put some sweat equity in it. And I said, as a young person, I said, you'll be able to turn that probably in about another 10 years and stuff. You can sell that house and move on to another house, keep building up and stuff. Some of them did do that and stuff. Now it's a little bit different with the DIY shows and everything is on. Everybody is in that particular, area. So it's driven the cost of the houses up and kind of out of the way of some of our residents and stuff. So I think they're getting back to that in terms of making sure that some residents can get into those houses, new residents can get into the houses. The one thing I always say, you want to make sure the city is there for the people. And they say, well, why not the people for the city? I said, because people move in and out constantly all the time. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure you have a viable and a beautiful place for residents to come in and live when they want to invest and put money in there.
What do you say? What do you say to the people who might see this, who think, oh, Muskegon Heights has seen its day. It's over. Things aren't going to change there. There are some people who think that way. There are people who think that way that look like you and me.
Yes.
That think that way. Yeah. Also, so I'm not just talking about our white counterparts, but what do you say to those people who think that way and really believe that?
Well,
what do you say to them about the community you live in?
I'll say something. I've always lived here. I invested in this community, and you have to have a vision in the community. You have to have a vision in the people. Our people are good people. Our community is a good community. Does it look old? Does it look ran down in some time? Yes, it does and stuff. But that's what happens when you get in and you build something up. It's been done in Chicago. It's been done in Detroit. It's been done in cities and counties throughout this state. I mean, throughout this country. And you just have to put that sweat in, that work in, and have the vision and the planning. You know, once you set a plan, you know, for a city, you have to stick to that plan.
So in essence, you're saying it boils down to leadership and the team.
It boils down to team and a collective vision and a collective plan. Everybody has to be on that same plan.
But that would involve leadership.
Right. It does involve leadership.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has to be something that when you talk to the individuals or community, that they're buying into it as well. And so they believe as well. So you have to have that belief in it too and stuff. If you're splintered, then you're going to have some people who are going to say, hey, we're not going to be able to do this. You know, we may not have the correct leadership. We may not have the right vision. We may not have the right plan. But that's why you have community committees who come in and involved and stuff and talk about those things. You also have your neighborhood groups and stuff. That's one thing that was getting more active when I was first coming in as mayor, was the neighborhood organizations. And they had a lot of input, a lot of input in terms of what they wanted to see the city look like and what they wanted to do. As a matter of fact, when we did our collaboration with the committee that came in and reviewed our operation, they actually did community leaders and stuff in the neighborhoods and so on to see what, you know, what they wanted as well.
So it is has, it fair? Go ahead.
You know, it has to be involvement from all. It has to be buy-in from all.
Yeah. With effective leadership.
With effective leadership. Throughout the city and the county, yeah, and so on. Because a lot of things you can't do without county as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. So essentially, you've missed the people, it sounds like.
I see the people, and I miss the people. Some of the people miss me. I'm not going anywhere. And, you know, my wife says often and stuff. She said, you know, you brought me here to Muskegon Heights. And she said, man, she said, I didn't learn to love it. I actually love it, you know. So she said, it's a beautiful place. It's, man, you can jump off here and go anywhere. What? Almost 3 hours away from Chicago, 3 hours away from Detroit. You know, you hop a flight, you can get anywhere. We have our own airport here in the county. You know, it's really a port of entry. You can leave here by air, ferry, you know, or road, you know. So, or you know, I would love to have that Amtrak come through here. You know, that would be just phenomenal to have that Amtrak come through. There are spurs here to take us out. When I was the mayor of Muskegon Heights, we had big conversation about that between the county, my planners, and so on. So that would be a plus.
All right. You going to win November 8th?
I'm going hard to win November 8th. I have good competition. I never underestimate anybody. And, hey, We're going for it.
And if for some reason you don't win, you wake up November 9th, always ask that question, of course, when I'm talking to political candidates. What happens?
Well, you know something? You asked me the same question last time. Get on board and help the people who are in. That's what you do. You try to rally the crew and get everybody on board to help the person that's there. Because even though it may not be you, It's still your community. It's still your city. They're still your people.
All right. Daryl Page, you can vote for him before now, mail-in ballots, or you can vote for him November 8th, District 7, County Commissioner there in Muskegon County. We wish you well. We wish you the best.
I'm the Democratic nominee, and if you want to find out more about me, you can go to www.darylpage.com. And see my information.
All right. We wish you well, my friend.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. Thank you for watching. This has been Torn in Two with Gregory T. Roberts, except I'm not Gregory T. Roberts. I'm John Covington. I've been sitting in for Mr. G-Man. And of course, this is the show that deals with truth in news and information. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Make it a